Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Unscripted SEO Podcast. Today, we have Lisa Ressler. She has been in the PPC world for, what did you say, 18 years? Is that right?
Yes.
Right? And many people have not been in the PPC world or SEO or whatever marketing world for maybe, like, 5 years is a long time. So 18 years is a good minute. And you've been making waves and numerous waves for yourself and your clients. And yeah, we just wanted to have you on. And so thank you for hopping on today.
Thank you for having me on. I'm super excited.
Love it. All right. So before we get into anything else, we were just talking about the new updates that Google announced for the world of PPC, not necessarily SEO. Do you want to touch on those real briefly?
Yes, I do want to touch on that really briefly.
Cool.
So, I would say 24 hours ago, Google announced that they will be releasing a new feature, and it really changes the way that we will work with search campaigns, which are the keyword targeted campaigns. And what it's called is AI Max for search campaigns, and it is a targeting creative feature update. And there's what they're saying is with one click, you will be able to AI enable, not just AI ready, AI enable your search campaigns. And what is so exciting, but also nerve-wracking about it is that they're employing a keywordless technology where they'll be looking more at what the search intent is and what the behavior is online and all that jazz.
I love that.
To target the ads, and they'll be looking at, I had, like I said, just less than 24 hours old, so I want to quote what they said properly. Learning from existing keywords, creative assets, and URLs.
This sounds so, in the last, 6 months, I've gotten relatively heavily, for personal things, not clients, into Facebook ads. And even in the last 6 months, with Facebook, about 9 months, it has gone from very much heavy targeting to, hey, just give us your creative and we'll handle it all. So it sounds similar to that. Am I understanding that right?
Well, for the search campaigns, I mean, it has traditionally been, you have your keywords, you have the match type, whether that's more broad or more narrow with how they're matching up to the searches. They are looking at different signals, but they really stick to, you know, pretty close to those keywords, and they stick to the landing page, or what they call the, you know, the destination URL, the final URL where you want to send people after you click on the ad.
Right.
So in this update, what looks interesting but also concerns me is that they're using a final URL expansion, which will send users to the most relevant page.
What does that mean?
That means they'll be looking at probably the landing page, because it's supposed to be released at the end of this month, which it's beginning of May now. So we'll put in one landing page, one destination URL that's, you know, the most relevant to our keyword themes and ads. And so what it looks like here is that we'll probably be giving them that URL, but they might be expanding it beyond that landing page.
And I would assume that that would include expanding it to our other web properties, maybe on the same website, different website, whatever, that's ours and not a competitor, obviously, right?
Right. No, just on that website. No, for sure. They wouldn't
Right.
go to another website and expense users to the most relevant page. So,
Like,
that I do not have the details on, but that's interesting because if you have certain specific calls to action, what if that's not on the
yeah.
page that they select?
Or what if you're a chiropractor
But
with three locations in a 5 mile radius and you're
oh,
running
yeah.
to one and it thinks for whatever reason location two is the better one and we're running, you know, that does not, yeah. So that's going to be interesting to see how they deploy all that. Is this going to be in a as a replacement or in addition to sort of update?
So you it sounds like you have to opt into it, and it is a button that you push
Okay.
to opt into this new feature in your search campaigns. But I did ask the question when it was first announced of the Google Evangelist if you can exclude anything, and she said you can't.
You
So
cannot.
you should be able, you can,
You
yes,
can. Okay.
affirmative, yes. So you should be able to exclude different ad groups, probably, that you don't want this to be opted into,
Right.
or you should be able to exclude some different parts of the campaign that you don't want it to be automated.
So that's
And obviously, just not opt into it for certain campaigns that are really critical. So then that leaves like how who is this appropriate for?
that makes sense. Yeah, this is totally different compared to, like you said, well, anything before. Like, is just it's going to be very interesting to see how it pans out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it can be very useful for some clients that especially that are doing, you know, awareness and reach and you know, maybe some local businesses that do need exposure, and maybe there's just one call to action on their entire site. Like you said, the you know, there are a lot of questions about the identifying the location of the user, but that would that just nitty-gritty stuff. But I mean, it can be useful for some things, but for others, I mean, there are, I've worked, I'm sure you have, for a lot of very, very picky clients and, you know, have a very specific strategy of, you know, who we're targeting and what needs to go down after they click on an ad or, so.
So that sounds well. So, in line with this AI approach, looking at so AI seems to be obviously changing the game for many, many people in many ways. Obviously, tech world probably first of all, and then that's, you know, as broader adoption happens, you know, that'll expand to, more B2C stuff, more at home stuff, you know, people trying to have more smart things talking, whether it's your security or watch, refrigerator or whatever, right? But so in the world of SEO and PPC, how do you see, and this could easily tie into that update, and you said it was AI Max or what was it called?
Yes, it is called AI Max.
Okay, cool.
AI Max for search campaigns.
So whether it's AI Max or another aspect of AI impacting marketing PPC and SEO in particular, how do you see it just impacting things as of right now with or without the AI Max update?
How AI impacts. How AI impacts search obviously has made a huge impact on the industry with more people using the AI tools to do their research, to get answers to their questions, And to be able to, almost do a bit of a better job, not only in grabbing the information from web pages, but also analyzing that information for you. So how that plays into ads is that users' search habits have changed pretty dramatically and very rapidly. And it seems like Google is really trying to play catch up at this point. I know it seems like a lot of the features are, really and maybe keeping
One
quiet a
second.
little bit more.
Forgive me for interrupting. It got really muffled for a minute. I wasn't able to understand what you're saying.
I think that Google is playing catch up right now with some of the AI features and releasing some of the features more hastily so that we're almost using testing them while they're being released.
Yep.
So, right. And so in order to adapt to these changes in searcher behavior, obviously they're coming up with ways to serve ads in the AI overviews, ads in Gemini, and then using this targeting and creative way where they're using all of these automated features to serve the ads. Microsoft has been working on the same thing. So earlier in the year, they were doing rolling out ads in Copilot, and they're using the same sort of theme there, where they're not just looking at keywords that are going on in the chat. They're looking at the whole intent of the message as the chat between the AI and the human evolves and serving the appropriate ads there. So that doesn't get talked about enough, and it really should.
No, it's not a question. So, with all that being said, as whether you're in the AI, whether you're in the PPC world or SEO or Blend or whatever, how do you see, especially with those updates, how do you see us as marketers maintaining control and that targeting to the best that we can? Because, like I mentioned. And I mentioned with Facebook, you mentioned with the Google side, targeting used to be very, at least with Facebook especially, extremely precise. I haven't done much with Google, so I can't speak to that well. It used to be extremely precise to where you can, quite literally target like a quarter mile radius of, someone who makes X amount of money, they drive this kind of car, they have this phone, et cetera. And now on Facebook's side, it's very much, here's the creative, go find them. And you just say everywhere, right? How do you see on the PC or SEO side with AI, how do you see us keeping that control of who gets shown our ads? Or do we need that control and should we just relinquish it to the AI and let them just figure that out? Make sense?
Oh, yeah, it does make sense. And you made me pause at the end. You threw that in there. Should we just relinquish our control to the AI? I think, well, let me answer that part first. There are in all of those ad platforms, they have those billing features, or I should say bidding features, where you can enter in, here's the ROAS I want, here's the ROI I want. And in that case, if the platform can get quality leads at the cost that you define, then sure, right?
Right.
But that's not the whole population of businesses that need to do advertising right now. They may not be that precise, especially when you're talking about smaller businesses, or I mean, there's unlimited amount of different business models out there. So in terms, yeah, so we can target people based on the audiences, on their audiences, if they're outdoors enthusiast, or those types of audiences, and based on their behavior, And I think those are those re that remains the same how we define them, but how those lists are created have really evolved over time, where Google is not just saying that they declared themselves an outdoor enthusiast or they did a couple things. I mean, it's much more sophisticated in how they're developing those lists based on all, like, I think they said millions of different audience signals.
Yeah.
And you combine
Especially,
them together.
right. That immediately takes me back to the update from last year, or the leak from last year with the hundreds of thousands of documents. It was April, May, or June. I can't remember the month. I should know this. Where they had the leak of all of the documents showcasing what they know of. The algorithm is like, oh, you're looking at all these other things too. We kind of suspected that, but now we really know. Anyway, coming back to what you just said, all of those millions of data points that they're basing all this information.
Right. Yeah. The data points and the combination of those data points. Right. And things they can infer from those data points. Right. But it has really evolved over time. So those same lists might be called the same thing, but they're a lot more sophisticated. And then our ability to mix and match those is, truly amazing. Plus we can get reporting on those types of lists. So the keywords has really it's really always sort of been that almost, that one for one sort of relationship where they're typing in the keyword, I'm interested in outdoors equipment, and you're going to serve me an ad about that. But with this AI Max opportunity and all of the other AI features in the world, we will be getting more data, not just on the keywords they're typing in, but what more about their intent. So are they buying the equipment for themselves? Are they buying it for someone else? Do they have a family? Is it water equipment? Is it land equipment? Do they like hiking? Do they like boating? And that's really some powerful ways that AI is helping with our targeting and sort of looking at the big picture.
Okay, so one of my questions I wanted to ask you was what do you see the blend or intersection between PPC and organic being? What's that intersection? And I think part of that intersection, you've said this a couple times, and this is one of the questions I just noted down, is intent. How do you go about, because like I have never worked with keywords. I have always like our approach is people first. Like literally, we in our SOPs, step one is analog research. We go in and we interview our paying customers, not my mom or my grandma because they think my product's good. I go and interview paying customers, ideally my paying customers or my clients or whoever's, right? And then from there, and we ask them a bunch of questions, and from there we try to get inside their head, figure out their intent, the emotional driving factors, all these things that dictate the actions or behaviors that then lead to search, so we can then reverse engineer, get the content up front, and then we'll bring in the digital research aspect of things, keyword research, or a big part of that is keyword research. So with that, understanding intent is kind of like everything in my book. Like if you don't understand the intent, the keyword doesn't matter. So how do you reverse that? Let's say you have a client, my coffee mug, and I'm a big coffee guy. My own espresso, I make, I'm a coffee snob. I make my own espresso at home 2 to 50 times a day. And I'm always collecting fun mugs. Like this is a mug from a dope little coffee shop in somewhere in Wyoming.
I was going
Remember?
to say, I was going to guess that Montana or
It was
Wyoming.
Montana or Wyoming. I'm pretty sure it's Wyoming because their flag is has a buffalo in it. Montana's, I can't remember. I live in Idaho, so we're anyway. So if my intent in looking for mountain coffee mugs is to buy one, or if I'm looking for inspiration to make one, or whatever that might be, because it could be, I could be very buy-oriented or inspiration-oriented. Those are two totally different intents. When I type in mountain coffee mug or mountain ceramic or whatever the keyword might be, right? How do you go about reverse engineering that intent that leads to those keywords?
You just gave me a really difficult example. Because most, so I think that your methodology, and you said you called it analog, I think that is, I think that I think that being able to, that will, okay, I think there'll be an advantage to continuing to do that. I think that human element of get, you know, getting inside the head, the psychology of understanding who your customer is going to be more critical than ever. I still think it's really important because you have to, the human has to start somewhere.
Like literally our
And
approach is people first. Like that's our whole thing, people first framework. That's everything revolves around people first.
right. So, you know, w Google will have the, w you know, the web page to get information from, but we still have to guide it. Starting out, you know, with any campaign, any sort of digital campaign online, we need to tell that platform, here's what we want to do. Here are our goals. Here's what our customer is looking for. Here's what they look like. And so that's going to be more important than ever. And I think that's one of the things that will be our advantage moving forward, where AI really cannot replace us. They can't be, they don't understand the human element. They can't be the feet on the street. They can't be, you know, listening. They don't understand the trends. And that's something where that's going to be, I think, super, super critical to keep gathering that information. But it's really in, you know, after we inform the machine, after we tell them, you know, here's what we think for the keywords, here's what we think for the audiences, here's our basic copy. In theory, that's how it's supposed to be working right now, is that we're giving it the high quality strategy, direction, targeting, assets, and then it's taking that, you know, like, you know, catching the pass and then running for the goal with it from us so that we can, you know, start the process all over again.
So, to piggyback on part of that, you made a comment, something to the effect of one of our big advantages right now is we feed that initial data set of the raw human experience component into the AI. When do you see in the near future? So, I'm a big, even though I live in Idaho, I hunt bears. I bear around. And, you know, I'm very rugged in that regard. I love sci-fi and futuristic shenanigans. Star Wars is my favorite, you know, The Matrix, all that kind of stuff. Ray Kurzweil wrote a book, The Singularity Is Near, in like the 80s or something like that. No, it wasn't the 80s, just 2005, I think, looking at it. And I'm assuming you know what the singularity is, right? Oh, okay. So the singularity is basically the intersection of time in which AI or machine learning is able to outprocess that of a human brain. And so,
Got it.
yeah, so then it becomes, it can then become a sentient being or entity and can take over the world because it's so smart that it's smarter than humans. As like a single processor will be a single processing unit processor will be able to literally outperform a human brain in every regard. And you know, his initial prediction was 2055, and now I think that's he's bumped that up substantially to like 35, 38, 2038-ish. But with AGI advancing as fast as it is, you know, if we look back to, I think one of the first AI marketing tools that was widely public was then, it's now Jasper, I can't remember, Jarvis, was the first version, first name, and then Marvel told him to cut that out. And you know that because I was in the first 100 customers with Jasper, and you know, contrast that to whether it's Manus, ChatGPT, or Claude 3.7 or whatever, it's night and day different in like 3 years. So contrast that to, you know, 5 years from now, coming back to my initial question as a long tangent of a rabbit hole, I apologize. Do you foresee in the near future AI making that raw human experience obsolete because AI will be able to do that? And all we have to do is say, hey, AI, here is our product. We want more buyers. We want people to buy this. And we think all of this stuff. Here's our buyers list. You know, give as much data as we can. But, you know, do you foresee that initial input becoming obsolete?
I mean, I think the amount of the input can change. And so if if you program it, if you currently customize it or program it right now with your customer personas, you don't need to continue to re-enter that in. But if something happens in the economy where you have new leadership that imposes a bunch of tariffs and you have some economic uncertainty, well, how does the I don't know if the AI knows that. Or if it will in the future. So now you have a huge variable that you need to input into the model, right? That can change it quite a bit. So, and that's been something that I've been talking about is we've got this huge variable. We have to insert it into our strategy now. But AI could help me. I can say, here's what we're doing. Here's the current situation. How should we tweak our approach? And by the way, can you do some research on Made in America in marketing? I just did some research on that. It was really interesting. But it took me to be able to tell it, here's what I think is going on. And so I mean, will it ever completely replace us? I mean, would that be a good thing so that we could live a life of being on vacation and leisurely pursuits? While AI runs those all of the other the tasks we don't have to do, I mean, I wouldn't know that,
Right.
and I probably won't see it in my lifetime. But
I don't know, we might.
yeah,
Have you seen the movie, the Pixar movie Wall-E?
oh man, it's been a long time.
The basic premise is humans used up all the resources on Earth, and Earth is quite literally looks like Mars with millions and millions of trash piles that were stacked by machines. And humans The remaining humans in one massive ship set out for a new planet to find to populate that had resources for humans to live off of. And the whole movie is, you know, about this little robot, and eventually he finds life on Earth, and the humans eventually return to Earth. But in the meantime, humans on this ship become like morbidly obese because all they do is sit around and AI takes care of them.
Yeah. I mean, that's well, I mean, that has happened to some extent since we all use computers. Just our work is computer oriented, so I mean, that wouldn't be an unfair prediction at all. That's really interesting. But I think, as AI is taking off, there are a lot of people have it just in general, not just advertising, but people have a lot of concerns about it. There's all sorts of different points of view and legislation that's going through. So I think, in terms of it, taking over the world, I think that someone would intervene. But that is for the super smart people and data scientists to answer. That
Right, I know.
gets out of my I like to keep it I like to keep on top of it and to understand it, but it gets out of I should have studied that when
Right.
I went to college.
I know. Same. So then coming back to the second tangent of that question, how do you determine, let's say again, I'm trying to sell a mug. How do you go about determining the keywords and then the intent of those buyers, whether for the keyword, example, and you can give me a different analogy if you want to run something easier. But, mountain coffee mug, right? Am I a buyer or am I looking for inspiration to create my own or whatever else might be in between? How do you determine intent when looking at keywords? Or what is the intersection between intent and those keywords when you're looking at the book, trying to understand what's what?
Well, I think a lot of times when searchers or consumers are looking for something that's product oriented, we assume it's a buying type of a search. They're not going to automatically put in buy mug, buy mountain mug.
Right. Unless you're
Although it used to be in the olden days they would, right? Buy mug for sale, cheap mug. Ceramic mug, those are all keyword modifiers that signify their intent a little bit. And without doing the keyword research on this, for those do-it-yourselfers, for those artists, creators, they might have slightly different keyword intentions, such as like ideas. I know ideas will be a big thing, inspiration. If you kind of think of like the Pinterest users or, I was looking up some like gardening ideas the other day, like art project ideas, and I got more results for the art supplies than I did for the finished pieces, even though I did see some for the finished pieces. So that's a tough example. So I think it is digging into that. We can still use negatives right now because right now, as we stand, without the robots reading our mind, they don't know the nuances and the subtleties of the products to be able to say, okay, I'm selling this mug. I have a good example. Actually, I have a client that's a manufacturer. And steel is involved in their manufacturing product, and we'll get a lot of searches coming through for blacksmiths and hobbyists.
That makes sense.
And so, yes. And so, one way that I deal with that is to ensure that the ad copy is very clear that it's a manufacturer, what they exactly sell. So I'm communicating very clearly before they click on it, right? Because that's where the money's coming in.
Right.
Okay. I mean, it's not the worst thing if it shows up accidentally. We don't want them clicking through on it. But then backing up before that, I do look through the search terms and look for themes that are coming through. And that's where you can find that stuff like, swords, blacksmiths, all kinds of things. Let's say that's not even close to what they do, but that's what Google thinks they do. So I can use that as negatives. I could even use audiences as negatives, or people that are interested in like Renaissance festivals,
Right, is coming up.
but right. So I mean, there's lots of different ways that we can tweak that sort of thing where it's going to be really hard for the computer to understand, what this steel manufactured part is in comparison to a sword.
Notes and questions. Okay, so correct me if I'm not hearing you right, but so you're the intent intersection. How do you discover intent, sort of line of thinking, or how are you just flat out targeting correctly? Is modifiers, keyword modifiers, plain and simple. Going back to the mug analogy, buy mug, mug inspiration, plain and simple. Is that, to dumb it down to a simplest way to say it, would that be one of the bigger aspects that you're using successfully to determine that intent and target is keyword modifiers?
That's the only way that we have right now. So unless they come up with a feature that says, tell us, tell give us like a negative type of an audience, and I can type in there, we We want to exclude anyone looking for swords, do it yourself, blah blah blah. And I can explain it in there. I need to have a way for me to discover where these, I guess you would say, like where the loopholes are for Google that they don't understand it. For me to identify that, I have to do that manually, then go in there and say, hey, this, we do not want this stuff.
Right.
This doesn't, this is not relevant to the client's product, and we don't want the ad cert. Then secondly, it would be for me to make sure that the messaging that's going out in the ads, if they slip through, so that the user knows that it's not about them. This is a totally different thing than what you're searching for. We just happen to show up. Sorry about that.
Right. So then the second half to my question there was in the exclusion process to slap exclusion process of making sure you don't get the people who are not buyers clicking on your ads and targeting is the headline copy itself.
Oh yeah, definitely. The headline copy, the description, you can take care of, and the images, if they have image thumbnails that they're serving as well, you can really qualify the customers with that very well.
Oh, yes.
Not only for the product, the search intent, you can also qualify them for like price points
Oh, yeah.
and all sorts of different things, right? So, I mean, you've seen like there are products that have like a wide variety. It's like, okay, the traditional, like the negative list of negative free, negative cheap, negative what, whatever. So yeah, there's many different places where you have to hit that up in order to ensure that the user intent that you know about is coming through on any of the advertising and any platform.
Love it. And what's I bring up those two elements, the copy itself for targeting and including and excluding, and then the same with the keywords, including and excluding, or the modifiers. Because a lot of people, I was talking to someone the other day. He's been doing SEO for about 3 years, and so he's an experienced noob, in my opinion, and that's anybody with a working, and it's not just SEO, it's just like you're good enough to know you're dangerous in whatever field you might be in at 2 to 3 year mark, but you're not 18 years experienced and you're not going to have, the level of wisdom and experience that, 18 years. Anyway, and we were talking about click-through rates and okay, so AI overviews is a thing. How do we still get as much click-through rate as we can? And a big piece to that was largely the headline is like we have one client, we have an average of like 9% click-through rate for all the keywords included, non-branded, and that's really strong. And we have 310 to 320,000 monthly visitors with this client, and they crush it. And it's because their content is just so on point, speaking to a very specific set of customers. And when we were looking at his stuff with some of his clients and projects and whatnot, a lot of the headlines were just not well crafted. Not to disrespect this guy because he'll be listening to this probably, but or let alone anybody else. It's my point is a really well performing campaign, organic or paid, can literally be made or broken by the copy and the creative that you use. Would you say that is accurate from what you're seeing on your side of things?
Yes, absolutely. Because I think, yeah, that does go to a little bit of wisdom too, because you really are tempted to maybe go with what AI is suggesting. Okay. And it's just grabbing stuff. It's grabbing stuff. I mean, somewhat intelligently. And you're also tempted to be super creative. This sounds great. And it's really not one of, I have not found in all my years of doing this that you really need a hook in an ad. You really want to tell them what it is. And a lot of times people forget to just do that. It is this particular thing. It is this thing. It is a manufactured part that does this. Or it is, or a mountain coffee mug. Or you have to, it, so yes, to answer your question, yes, that's very important. And that really goes back to basic marketing skills and knowing the fundamentals, which, yeah.
You said something that is very, because is this visible in my thing? Yeah. You can see some of my small library collection that is, the rest is in boxes at the moment. But I think I still have up there. Yeah, I do. Three of Russell Brunson's books. And, he's very, the most basic framework that he talks about that is in every piece of marketing, debatably, is the hook story offer framework. And so, you have someone at his caliber saying, hey, hook story offer. And, when you're studying headlines or frameworks, whether it's, the ADA, attention, interest, desire, action, or problem, agitate, solve, or whatever other framework someone wants to come up with tomorrow, it always starts with a hook in some form or fashion. So I find it super interesting that you say almost the opposite right there, with you don't always need a hook. You just got to tell the customer what it is that they're buying or about to click on. And that comes back to a principle that I just only recently in the last couple months learned about, which is a copy hinge. And you start with the headline, but then the hinge of the copy, the piece of the copy that really hooks them in, is telling them what they're about to read. And that comes back to, speech class or writing class in college. What's the core framework for a speech? Tell them what they're about to listen to. You tell them about what you're about to talk about. Talk about what you just told them that you're going to talk about. Then you recap what you just talked about, sort of thing. And it was I and like my, the conversions that I was seeing went from like a 0.5% on paid ads conversion to cash to 3 to 4%. And that's just with one particular campaign that I was personally working on that had that didn't have the copy hinge, and that then the second one, the better version, did have the copy hinge, which is flat out telling them what they're about to get. But I find that super interesting that said halfway the opposite of what everyone else on the other says.
Well, I was thinking more of a sensational sort of hook thing, because in paid search ads, it's the writing is a little different. You only have so many characters to get your message across.
Yes.
And right, and you only have so many characters. You're completely limited by that. You can put a lot more words on a billboard if you wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
But each piece of advertising materials that you consume have different purposes, and PPC ads have a very specific purpose, which is different from Facebook ads.
Very different.
Facebook that would work better, and that might work better also for display ads and video ads that we're doing, but for search PPC ads, we're trying to answer their question. That's Google is supposed to be categorizing the world, right? Wasn't that their original purpose? Catalog the world, right? And the search engine is supposed to be answering questions. If we get down to the very basics of what it's supposed to do, it's supposed to answer a question. So you don't want to get too fancy or too creative with your copy, because you want to tell them, hey, I'm answering your question. And secondly, if you get too fancy and they're expecting to get something different from what they click through to get, then you're just making them agitated and irritated and starting off in a bad foot with that person because they didn't get what they expected. You're not meeting their expectations. So it's, each one of those, and is going to be different. And knowing that is really important that you get with wisdom, and also something the AI doesn't capture very well.
No, it doesn't. And what I find interesting is, because, as an SEO, I've been doing SEO for 14, 15 years. And so, I've seen my fair share of Google ads. Because, I'm what marketing person, or let alone average human, doesn't open up Google daily? Versus, people like us who work with Google daily. So we definitely have seen our more fair share of stuff. And so contrasting what I see on a regular basis with Google PPC compared to what I've been learning in recent, the last year-ish, 9-ish months with Facebook ads, just validating your point from my perspective, totally different. But so that leads me to a question that I had, and that was between the copy, between or headlines, mostly headline, because sure, with the meta description, we can put it in there, but of course, Google may or may not show what we want it to show when it comes to that. With the headline on Google, whether it's paid or organic, what do you see the difference between the two? And what do you see working with either of the two?
The difference between the organic headlines and the paid headlines is that the paid headlines can be completely customizable per the search or audience. Would you agree? Because SEO is your expertise.
Well, when you say customizable, can you clarify what you mean?
We can customize the message more in the headline for each and go into great detail for the keyword themes than you can in SEO.
Got it. So
So we can do a different group for mountain coffee mugs versus zoo coffee mugs.
yeah, big difference.
Right.
So
An
with
elephant versus a kitty cat, like we have that ability to have it more customized to the keyword or the keyword themes. And we can also put in all kinds of special messaging, such as promotions, features, benefits, all that kind of jazz, which it's really complementary to the organic listings.
Yeah, they really do complement. They have to.
It's like a bonus. Yes.
So, in regards to the way the copy is structured and the way it's communicating to the user, do you see a difference there?
Do I see how it's commu- I mean, it depends on it's the depends it depends answer.
Yeah.
So typically what I personally will do is see how they're showing up or if they're showing up for the organic searches and how it's showing up. So then that gives me the opportunity to say, okay, well, there this is basically the home page is showing, or category pages are showing, but we're not getting these other pages. We also don't have an offer in there most of the time as well. But I mean, like I said, it's completely complementary. It's when those it's so powerful to have those two show up together so that you're dominating the results.
Oh yeah. That's another great question. Do you ever see campaigns that are working better than others when you have a client that is dominating with organic and paid versus they're only dominating with organic or only paid? Does that make sense?
Yeah, there are actually studies on that too, that I think it's something like there's a 20% lift in them both. I don't remember. It's a pretty old study, but I mean, it only makes logical sense, right? if you're getting more exposure in the search results for your brand or for your products, and you have a nice organic listing, and then you max out your PPC ad with maybe more detailed messaging, again, the features, benefits, any promotions, speaking directly to that audience, the call to action, again, the call to action. You're really amplifying that. So it's always been confusing to me why over the years I've always heard this, that this is being cannibalized or that's being cannibalized. And that, I don't know. I mean, there's data on it, but it doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you can have more of a good thing, in this case, it's good, and it
Oh yeah.
doesn't, it shouldn't be one or the other. I mean, I have seen over the years that if went the big debate over should we bid on our brand name because we're already showing up. And I'll always say it's great to be there. You can control how much you want to pay for that. And wouldn't you feel bad if your competitor showed up there in the first slot above your organic listing? So
A
that's
handful of
what.
thoughts. So Surf Pro, they are a multi-billion dollar brand. They do fire and water restoration. They're the biggest
Yeah.
period in that space. No one is even close to their size and revenue or in any aspect. And like literally, we've talked to dozens of, if not more, of different fire water restoration companies that are exact copy paste of Surf Pro, but just infinitely smaller. Like maybe one location versus the 2 or 3,000 that Surf Pro has. And their whole strategy that they're making millions on is literally bidding on Surf Pros, like Surf Pro fire
Yes.
restoration and all the variants of those keywords. Like that is their strategy. And in some areas, like bigger metropolis, New York City, Miami, or whatever bigger city, it works. And it can print money for them if they have the ad budget to compete against Surf. But yeah. So
Yeah, absolutely. And also some of those are going to be they're going to be prioritized because they're doing local targeting, they're doing geo-targeting, and versus maybe Serve Pro is doing larger geo-targeting or national targeting. Does that make sense?
oh yeah.
Yeah. So Google will prioritize that local targeting, that detailed geographic targeting. I haven't talked about that for a very long time.
Yeah. I've managed over 20,000 locations between the businesses that we've served. So it's definitely been I've always had a local client in some form or fashion, whether a Fortune 10 or, my personal chiropractor that I'm going to go see tomorrow.
Right.
So many questions. So with, okay, let's get a little bit more tactical here. What, so we have all of these AI tools at our disposal. Claude, GPT, Manus is, I'm really digging Manus personally, and all the other agent suites out there and whatnot. What are the specific tools that you are using or AI powered processes that are enabling you to have successful campaigns with PPC?
Okay. So what tools am I using?
Basically, yeah.
Okay. I'm not using any one tool that can create an entire strategy or campaign for me, but it has been definitely helpful in getting ideas. That beyond what my human brain can think of, but I need to prompt it a lot, right? So I need to put in, and this will be, I'll go between ChatGPT and Gemini. And Gemini actually, you, I don't know if that's surprising or not. It does better with any Google Ads questions, right? You would
Yeah.
think it would. It's just, it is. It's always better. So it's obviously trained better on the help files and the data. And then I always try to trick it and say, is there anything you know that you're not telling me? But you know, that's just my own entertainment.
Right. Does that ever come back with anything useful?
No, it will always say that it can't give me any confidential and proprietary information.
Right.
So it's always worth trying.
I know.
So
So you're effective.
but so it can really, so Gemini can dig into a little bit more of the details, but of course you do need a human to be able to fact check that, because sometimes it has outdated information or it doesn't really understand how it works in real life. So I can say my client sells XYZ, what types of keyword themes would be appropriate. I don't know where it's getting those from. I don't think it's not using a keyword tool for what is actually being searched on, but what you can do is you can take those keyword themes and then you can, you know, go back to the keyword tools if you want to do that to see what the search volume is.
So you're, correct me if I'm wrong, so make sure I'm understanding. So you are using AI, whether it's GPT or Gemini, to come up with ideas, maybe flesh out ideas, brainstorm, et cetera, maybe in some tasks, maybe speed up the task. But at the end of the day, you're still the human driving the machine. There's not one set of tools, there's not one set of routes that go per se. You're just maybe speeding up certain elements are making certain elements in the creative process easier with AI.
Yes, absolutely. So the Made in America that I messaging that I touched on earlier. So a client wanted to know about the Made in America messaging. So I did. So I started out with doing research in AI about that. I'm not going to read 100 websites about that. But it came up with some interesting studies on it and came up with a conclusion that seemed to make sense, which was that people like the idea of things being made in America, but will only pay so much for
That's a thing.
it. Right. And so to use that messaging for value and convenience, but not necessarily for patriotism. So that makes common sense. That's something that you can check. You can check the sources and say, hey, that's a pretty good direction. And it would have been very difficult for me to research that all myself. So then I can take that, talk about that more, research it more, and you know, give the client, here's the direction, here's what we have found about, you know, using this sort of messaging, and then apply it to the campaigns. Obviously, the whole campaign is not going to be about being made in America, but subbing out some of the headlines, you know, and you know, putting that in as a benefit to purchasing from them can't hurt right now.
Totally. When you were talking about Made in America, my mind immediately went to Fender because I'm a bass player, and Fender is,
Oh, okay.
yeah, and they've been making their basses, or at least their basses. I'm sure probably the other guitars and instruments, but I don't think they take the basses in either Mexico, largely in Mexico and the U.S. And you know, there's Japan and Germany and other places, but largely Mexico and the U.S. And the U.S. products are always more expensive, but what's interesting with them is, and this is just a total side tangent of a thought, is their US products are substantially better and they last longer and their quality control is more consistent. Because I've owned three Mexican basses and like five or six over 20 years American basses from Fender. And you know, I don't buy the cheaper ones, and I'm regularly having my American basses outlast the Mexican basins. Anyway, it just, as you were talking, it made me wonder if they charge a premium on purpose and then on purpose don't put the quality control into the cheaper ones in other countries. So we do buy American made and pay that premium. Anyway, just a.
I thought it in this exact case, I actually thought that the Mexican fenders were produced to be lower end starter models or beginner models.
You can, it used to be kind of, but you can literally spend 2 grand on a Mexican base fender. It's because like with Fender, they have this Squire model, their line, Lexus versus Toyota. They have their Squire line and it's notably cheaper. Like you're not going to get all the bells and whistles, but it's a great out of the box base. And then you have Fender. You can buy a cheap and expensive of both of those models in Mexico and or from Mexico, Mexican made or American. But yeah, so like it may not have used to been that way, but at least right now, I know because I was a couple months ago, I was in the market for, oh, what? I have a new scratch itch. But yeah, so it just made me wonder if people, if that strategy was in place on purpose. Anyway, what do you, so in the world of PPC as a whole, and this is a super broad question, so it could be a super general answer, or as specific as you want. What do you see working that you did not expect to be working right now? Or, and maybe nothing, just, hey, this is the usual stuff and it just works. It's got to be deploy the foundational principles properly.
I think you always have to stick with the foundational principles. And I think that it's important that we continue to provide the high quality manual assets for the ads. And we talked a lot about that today, about the strategy, about the visibility and the search results in comparison to other organic listings. And searcher intent. So there's a lot that goes into it that AI just cannot do right now.
Right.
So it's important for us to continue to be on top of that and to make sure we keep it real, keep it real, keep it human, keep a strategy involved. But there are some areas that we can have use AI to do this research, like I mentioned earlier. Give us some seed ideas, and then you can use that to validate that information, and you've just saved yourself, hours of time in that research and maybe those starter ideas. So I think that is, that's definitely working for me, and I love this concept of the story of this of the Made in America messaging, because it's something that came up very suddenly. It would have taken me hours to do, and I was able to really, really accelerate the process of incorporating this into our ad campaigns by using AI. But the AI didn't do it all.
Right. Always. Like there's a reason like the influx of prompt engineering as a job has like exploded comparatively in the last couple of years. Because it's the prompt is initiated by a human and not an AI. And the AI is driven by the prompt as of right now. What are those foundational principles that like as a PPC marketer, you must abide by in your mind. What are the top few that come?
They must abide by. There are many things that they must abide by, I think, to have a quality PPC campaign in general. And we touched on all of them. So I smell a social media post coming out of this, because it's important to understand your buyer. We talked about no understanding their intent. And I agree with you. I think it's really important to have that hands-on approach. Oops, sorry about that. They have that ha hands-on approach to understanding your customer, what their behavior is, and ensuring that there's a strategy for every campaign, not just taking the AI's word for it with whatever tool that you're doing, and having a strategy for the ads, that the ads are going to have, XYZ messaging per the keyword theme. You're not just duplicating it all across. And always a strong call to action that is tying back to the website. I mean, you wouldn't believe how many people forget to have a call to action.
No, I believe it. I believe it. I believe it. So then let me ask you the flip side of that question. I wrote it down, but I wouldn't forget it. If I'm running ads right now and I'm having lackluster results or no results, what would you do to audit what your campaign is doing so that way you can fix it? And how would you then go about fixing it? It's kind of like the opposite of the question of what are the foundations.
Okay, so if someone isn't, they're not getting any results, they're not getting the results they want. Well, there are a lot of reasons why things don't take off and they don't get the results they want. There's a lot of different touch points where it could not be working. I think the first one that I see is usually budget, that there isn't enough budget to get enough impressions, to get enough clicks, to get enough traffic, to get enough conversions. Sometimes you can very, very easily just do the math on that, like common sense math in your head, and say it's not physically possible to get results given this.
Yeah. And that's funny enough, the same on Facebook. I about a month and a half ago, so I'm in a paid group called Nothing Held Back by Alan Sultanic. Everybody and their mother should get in there. It's amazing. For all forms of marketing. And they have a Facebook ads coach in there. And I was like, hey Lauren, here's all the stats, here's all this stuff, here's the copy, yada yada, here's everything. And it's not working. And he's like, yeah, this looks great. Turn up your budget. I'm like, that's it. And like, literally, I'm not exaggerating. It went from one to two sales a day at, I think it was like $40 a day. And I turned it up to 100. And my cost of acquisition went down by 30, 40% by just increasing my budget. So granted, that's on Facebook. But so I'm just saying from my personal experience, limited personal experience, with media buying, I can attest to that for sure.
Yes, there are a lot of technical reasons why that happens, and it's one of the most painful things for advertisers to hear, right? And they think, oh, I just have to throw more money at it. It's not really about throwing more money at it. It's not about spending more as much as it is gathering data so that the algorithms can work properly. And yeah, and it takes, and like I said, there are some general calculations that you can do, just like that coach, he could just look at it and say, yeah, just here's what you need to do. Try that first. Some other things that come up is just having really disconnected keywords, messaging, and landing page. That's a fundamental
Congruency.
that's been around since the beginning of the creation of the Google Ads world. And another one that comes up that is the campaigns being restricted by the targeting, sort of like being restricted in the first example, being restricted by the budget, is that people go in and they're like, I'm going to target this audience perfectly with every exact detail, and they don't realize that they have narrowed down the targeting so much that they're not allowing the algorithm to serve it. You're asking for this one little thing, and we can't get you there with this detailed targeting. So I'll say like crazy detailed geo targeting, and then exact match keywords, and then And small budgets, like why did you bother? Because
Well,
it's not going to happen.
it's the same with us on the SEO side of things, because someone we have a client who will probably listen to this, so I don't want them to think I'm talking about them. But they, when we started with them, their budget did not ref their SEO budget that they've prior to us that they were investing did not reflect the assets and authority that their site should have had with the 2+ years of $8,000-$9,000 a month. I'm just like, this is all you have after over $200,000? What? And I was frank with them, but I'm just like, you're spending money on the wrong things. And we started off with them and like, yeah, we don't need to spend this much because you're just, how do I say this right? You don't need to spend $8,000-$9,000 a month to get the results that you're looking for if you just put the money in the right place. And having those assets unlocks those opportunities for Google to come in and properly rank. Similar but different.
The same concept where, being very exact can restrict your opportunities.
Yes.
You have to look at it, if you're Best Buy and you're selling TVs, you have the world of people searching for TVs.
Right. That's good. Okay, the last question. If so, we've talked about a lot of things, some of it more broadly, some of it a little bit deeper. What is the one piece of information that you want listeners to walk away from? You're like, if this is the only piece of this conversation that you listen to, I want you to understand or recognize or pay attention to or execute on this. And what is that? Yeah, I agree. Especially on the SEO side, because too many people will pay attention to. Literally, I had someone ask me, a coaching client the other day asked me, "Hey, can you just do a quick comb through on these couple pages and make sure our H1s and all those things are properly in place?" Those are important. Don't get me wrong, but I can strip all of those out of an entire silo of a website and still crush it. Because that's too, granted, again, it's important, but it's not always a make or break, and sometimes can be too much in the weeds of a fact compared to all the other things you need to get to. So I love this conversation.
Definitely, yeah, definitely.
Definitely, that's for sure. It's oftentimes the strategy is the North Star sort of thing. Like, oh, is this in line with my North Star? Yes, do it. No, don't. Maybe not sure, put it on the shelf and revisit later, sort of thing. Very cool. Okay, so where can people connect with you, sign up to your email list, your Substack, your hire you to do PPC or whatever? Where can they find out more about you and connect with you? Very dope. Yeah, and I'll be sure to link all those in the show description and anywhere else that this might be published. Well, thank you so much for your
Well,
time.
thanks for
I
the
really,
chat.
yeah, it's always fun talking SEO-ish shenanigans with someone who doesn't do SEO, but kind of like on the flip side. Very cool. Well, I could talk. I, no joke, could talk for probably hours. But I know I want to respect your time. I have calls here in a little bit. So until next time, Lisa, talk
Thank
to you
you.
and everyone else. Live long and
Okay.
prosper.